Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Tom, I really didn't expect to be standing there in front of the fans in Denver promoting a match with Becky Lynch a couple weeks ago. I didn't either, and I thought Lita did really well, Becky did really well, and the stars aligned in that the fans like Lita enough, and I think Lita and Becky did their jobs well enough, that they might have the fan reaction they're looking for in a match that people are anticipating. What did you think of that segment?
Segment overall I thought was, I'm going to say they are searching for a storyline that's going to work as well as it can between two wrestlers that they want to see go against one another because of the name value. I'm not sure how much is really there beyond that. That doesn't feel like a reach, but for their part, you know, for each of their parts, fine. I am personally happy to see this because before spoilers broke through every single barrier that you could have wanted to put up on social media last Saturday, Lita was my pick to win the Rumble. I thought that it made a lot of sense for various ways that are now history. But I'm glad that she's sticking around to do this because they gave her the spot on Raw before the Rumble. She got a great reaction. Still holds her own in the ring or you know, on the mic, I mean to say. And I think you're absolutely right. They are getting the reactions they want out of this and thereby making it one of the more anticipated matches on the Elimination Chamber card.
Lita is now in a position to make, you know, a lot of money with the vaunted Saudi Arabia paydays. And we know Saudi Arabia shows feature special matchups that normally would have been saved for, say, a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam and fans stateside. And heck, traveling in from Europe would have had the chance to attend. This is another match where WWE's making it feel really special. They talk about, you know, the backstory. Becky says, Lita, you inspired me as a teenager. You didn't turn your nose up at me when I arrived. I look up to you. And it's, you know, it seems sincere and genuine, but she goes, but, you know, I'm in my prime and I need to take you down. This feels like a special attraction type of match that would have worked at WrestleMania in place of a rerun or, you know, a reshuffling of something that we've seen before. And I'm not saying they necessarily would have gone with it, Tom. I mean, Lita is, you know, Lita feels maybe special attraction on an off marquee brand show more than a WrestleMania match, but they're giving it the type of hype where you wonder, could they have made this work at WrestleMania if the Elimination Chamber was just in, you know, Kansas City or Miami or something and not Saudi Arabia, where they try to add those kind of extra special attractions, such as like Goldberg 2. Again, I'm not sure if it hits that level, but it just sort of reminds me of what Saudi Arabia in a way takes away from fans who really like to be present for big moments. And Lita was a big enough star, I think this would have qualified.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. I think, you know, one of the reasons she was my pick is because I feel like it's an instance where you can have a legend act win and go on to, you know, win a big match, go on to a big show, and it wouldn't feel, I don't think, like she would have been taking the spot away from a more contemporary wrestler or an up-and-comer, because these opportunities were not afforded her at the time. She didn't have women's Royal Rumbles. She didn't have women getting this high up on the WrestleMania card, if appearing on it at all. So, I mean, maybe I've just become too jaded by the Saudi Arabia shows, but I'm just sitting here like, you know what? I'm happy she's getting the payday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm with you on everything you said about Lita. I'm still not thrilled about anybody getting, there's always kind of a asterisk next to happy they're getting a payday given where that payday is coming from.
Fair.
You know, so I'll point that out. But yeah, I mean, if everybody's going to go, almost everybody is going to get in on, you know, the Saudi Arabia, you know, blood money fest, then, you know, who better than Lita to, you know, get her chance, because everything you said is correct. You know, she was one of those women who had a big influence. I think that's genuine on women's wrestling. She didn't fit the mold, and I think she appealed to a slice of the WWE audience that some of the other women wrestlers didn't. And she didn't get those big paydays. And so she gets to come back and get this opportunity. I mean, if we're going to say the Saudi Arabia deal with WWE has feel-good moments, this is about as close as it gets if you look at what Lita contributed, who she inspired, and what she earned compared to what people today are earning. So there's an optimistic framing of it. Or a positive.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And for whatever it's worth, I just think she's making it as believable as she can that there is a reality where she wins the match, even though we all know it's not happening.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like, quote, we know, but I don't know how many people watching who are just sort of along for the ride and living in the moment I think those fans exist out there, you know, and,
exactly.
And a lot of them are in these buildings. And for them, they might be thinking, Lita's going to take the belt from Becky and there's going to be a rematch at WrestleMania. I know when I was younger, I created all kinds of scenarios about things that now I look back on and go, I probably knew better, but I still, they gave me a story to believe in and I invested in it. And, you know, as a Minnesota sports fan, I invest in the possibility of like making the playoffs, winning in the playoffs, winning a championship, even though I know it won't happen. Although I'm starting to, I don't want to get off on the Timberwolves and Wild right now, but I'm starting to feel pretty good about things on Minnesota side of things with sports. But I spent my whole life sort of rationalizing why they, you know, do better than they did. So I think my point is people who are fans of local sports teams know what it's like. I think people who are fans of Lita are going to tell themselves this could happen. And it'll be, you know, a fun story. And I think, you know, Becky continues to do really good work being authentic self in terms of the talent she has on the microphone, while also putting over and not taking away from who she's standing in the ring with and giving fans a reason. And they don't always embrace it. And the story or the opponent isn't always there to make it work, but she's given every chance for Lita to really get over. And I think Lita has done her part better, not only with her mic work tonight, but also her facial expressions in reaction to what Becky was saying. And Lita had, you know, has had a good amount of on-camera practice of some of those kickoff shows. She wasn't always, I don't know, crisp and coherent on those things, but it was practice on camera in recent years compared to just her wrestling years. And so that might be benefiting her too.
True. And yes, I agree. That is where I'm coming from with the idea that she's making it believable, is that I think telling the story to her own fans who may be fair weather and may be more inclined to believe, I think that they're at least achieving that much.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, we got a lot more to talk about. So let's pause and introduce the program. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, February 7th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. The host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, along with the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, and a variety of VIP-exclusive podcasts throughout the week. Go VIP to hear everything that I do and the whole team of contributors at the PW Torch site and family of podcasters. One of those is my co-host tonight, and that is Tom Staupe from the PW Torch Daily Cast that covers NXT, aptly named PWT Talks NXT. Tom, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me back, Wade. Yes, PWT Talks NXT live on Tuesday nights after NXT. And I had said that I wasn't going to be on tomorrow night because I no longer get sci-fi, but you and I found a workaround for Raw tonight. So I told the guys that I'm back in, so you'll be able to call in and talk to me tomorrow night about all of the up-and-coming NXT talent. Of course, you can also hear me and Kelly Wells on the VIP side of things, covering the other end of the NXT spectrum 8 years back. That is the name of the show, and that is what we cover, the episode every Saturday that aired on the WWE Network 8 years prior. We are in the lead-up to the very first, basically not called TakeOver yet, but the very first basically a TakeOver. They're not even calling it anything yet. They just keep on calling it live on the WWE Network. But we are building up to that Bo Dallas-Adrian Neville ladder match.
So So you're entering essentially the takeover era, and we're starting to, it's definitely starting to feel like it's in the rearview mirror. You know, that whole Triple H-led NXT era and those great takeovers that preceded AEW's rise and overtook at the time, you know, Ring of Honor being kind of the darling indie promotion. And, I mean, the energy in the building for takeover specials, especially when they ran bigger arenas on bigger weekends, is it's just still stands out of my mind as such a high point. And I kind of wonder, you know, where NXT, I mean, we know where NXT is headed, but I wonder how people are going to look back at that takeover era and what place in history it's going to have, because there were such special moments with big name talent on those shows. I mean, I love the weekly TV shows. Just, you know, it was a bit of a throwback in its format. It was, you know, in an era of 2 and 3 hour raw TV shows and oversaturation, it was just a good length and reasonably paced, and it didn't feel like it was just hungry for ratings. And so, you know, I still miss that old weekly NXT, and I do kind of miss the excitement of the initial Wednesday night battle. Tom, you've been there, you've covered all of it, and now you're entering kind of the takeover era. Do you have a little sense of melancholy when you see the beginning of it, or kind of excitement that you're going to relive it?
I think curiosity as to how I will feel moving forward now that we have, now that NXT has reverted to, you know, because they kept the brand name after the game show era, I can never say the original format, but the format they went to after moving to the Full Sail studio. Now that we've reverted to that, because I have always been in conflict over the takeover era, I will say right up front that I'm there with you. I think one of the other particularly special things about it is because at the time, of course, still taped in front of the same people in a small studio, but live on TV, they were not live episodes in a small studio. And the takeovers, once they moved out of Full Sail, those were the only opportunities to see these wrestlers on a bigger stage, presented as bigger stars in front of the larger crowd and live. And so there was that novelty to it as well.
Yeah.
However, that takeover era does encompass the era of NXT that was in conflict with itself. I say it all the time, and I say it enough times that I should go back and get the exact wording of the quote, but whatever it was that Triple H said when he said, "We accidentally created a brand," because this really was supposed to be developmental all along, and takeover and bringing in seasoned wrestlers, and we're, you know, I feel like Sami Zayn is really the start of that, and we've gotten about, I want to say, halfway through his run on 8 years back at this point, and it really is just like, okay, what are we doing here, though? Because this is a guy that did not need the extra seasoning. I understand you maybe want to show him where the WWE cameras are or whatever, but what are we actually accomplishing here? And I say that while loving most of the takeover era as well, and as an adult fan, of course, you know, the most I've ever loved wrestling will always be the late 90s and you know, early 2000s, as I think most people will say. But, well, most people who came into it at the time I did, which was right around that time anyway. But as an adult, a more analytical fan, the takeover era is the most that I have enjoyed wrestling outside of my adolescence.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, very good. We'll pivot back to Raw and invite our live listeners to give us a call and also email us. The phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad and let us know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's get to our – we got a lot more to talk about on Raw. I thought a decent amount happened for a show, Tom, that I was worried was just going to be phoned in. And because they're on Sci-Fi, we talked off-air briefly about this. I think it'll be the lowest viewed Raw of all time. I just up against Olympic coverage, bumped Sci-Fi. People like you did not have access to Sci-Fi. It doesn't have the same penetration as USA. And just with Raw's ratings, you know, being down compared to prior years for a variety of factors, I'm fully expecting this to be the lowest viewed live Raw ever.
Yeah, and I of course was thinking the same thing, and I'm curious to hear what thoughts you have, because at this point sitting here, even scanning back up and down my notes, I barely feel like I watched an episode of Raw at all. This felt very just wheel spinny to me. Like, Elimination Chamber is mostly fully formed yet. I know we still need a sixth person for the women's chamber, but it feels like we've basically got the card. It feels like the stories are mostly told, and we're just in wheel spinning mode. Like, let's just throw some matches out there and get in and out.
I can't point to major developments on this show, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought that it was a just fun episode that moved along pretty swiftly for me. Maybe the first hour not having commercials is part of it, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought that of course they hyped a singles match that I was looking forward to that barely got started really, or didn't really get to have a full fledged match, but they followed up with a tag match. And then we had the your people's opinions on the show might teeter on how they felt about the opening segment with what they call it, the quiz bowl.
Starting opening with that is quite an interesting choice. Being on a different channel, you know, you want to get those sci-fi. I'm trying to think of a sci-fi show other than Resident Alien, which they advertised to us over and over again throughout the night. Like the commercial-free first hour, but Jimmy Smith is going to try to sell you on Resident Alien. but yeah, they used it as a cross promotion opportunity, and I'm thinking, okay. I mean, I enjoyed the Quiz Bowl, and it seems like other people on Twitter that I follow enjoyed the Quiz Bowl. But is that what sci-fi fans who would be tuning into whatever they usually watch at on 8 o'clock on Monday nights? Is that what's going to keep them around? I don't know.
I guess if the idea is there's people who tune into sci-fi at a certain time and we're like, whoa, my show isn't on. Oh, but it's WWE. I haven't been watching it lately, but let me check it out. I mean, I'm sure there were, you know, at least three people who fit that bill, and yeah. maybe thousands or tens of thousands. I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious. I'm just saying there literally was, you know, two or three people who felt that way, and maybe lots. I'm trying to set the bar low for this point to hold. if you just open up with a match, you know, that might not be their thing, but, you know, I'm not into wrestling right now, and I don't know who these people are. But if you just have this weird scene of, you know, just this old quiz show format, you might pull some people who aren't fans in who want to guess along and get to know the characters. And Chad Gable is so good at what he does. I thought all four, Kevin Petra too, give him credit because he's getting more praise, deservedly so, as a rising star. They all did well.
And
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Is he getting acclaimed?
He seemed very.
Better? I'm sorry. Is he getting better or getting acclaimed? What are you asking?
Oh, well, I guess both, but I was asking specifically about the acclaim. I will say that he seemed quite giddy to say, welcome to Monday Night Raw, as if it was like live from New York at Saturday night.
It's very anecdotal, Tom, but I have heard more people starting to notice that he's good and mention that saying that he's good makes it sound like it's objectively true. I'm hearing more people give the subjective opinion that they enjoy him, that he's good. And he's getting, you know, when you're in the ring, how many backstage interviewers have been entrusted and featured to host a segment in the middle of the ring on a podium? You know, he's taken the spot that normally Corey Graves or Byron Saxton or Jimmy Smith would have had. You know, one of them would have probably been hosting if not for a sense that management is a fan of Kevin Patrick right now and the job that he's doing. So I think he is a good straight man for he hams it up without bogarting, without stealing the scene from the wrestlers. But I think he augments things well. It was the better version of Mean Gene Okerlund in the AWA, where he had reacted to the wrestlers in a way that you look forward to, but he didn't just Bigfoot the scenes. And I think that's the opinion on him right now. So anyway, I thought that was a fun segment. So yeah. Maybe
the term bogarting does not get used enough. So thank you for that. And you know, hey, good for him. Because the last time Riddle was in a game show segment, Byron Saxton hosted, and it is and probably will forever be the best thing Byron Saxton has ever done on television.
Remind us of a couple good Byron moments.
I think that's the one.
No, I mean, like, what stood out from that? Sorry, yeah.
It was just the different charisma that came out.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I think my favorite Byron Saxton moment is calling Bo Dallas Bo Salad when he was ring announcing, and we rewound the episode on 8 years back, and yes, indeed, he called Bo Dallas a Bo Salad.
Well, we'll talk more about Quiz Bowl in a bit, but let's get to some calls. We'll begin with William in San Diego, and then on deck, I want to hear from Kyle. William, thank you for calling. What did you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. I think I'm largely in agreement with you, Wade, that I thought it was a fun show. Even though it was kind of a little filler, but that doesn't necessarily have to mean a bad thing. I thought it was fun. I wanted to stick with the opening segment. I thought for a while, I thought that Otis and Gable they've been super fun to watch. I don't know. What do you guys think of them? I feel like I've turned a leaf with them.
I have been a fan of Gable for a long time. In American Alpha, Tom, the enthusiasm, the earnest joy of performance that he and Jason Jordan had stood out to me in a way that didn't come across as obnoxious or phony. It just felt like these people, this team is excited to be doing what they're doing. They're talented. They want to win. And they just, you couldn't help but just jump on board with them in their quest to win their matches. And I think he's emoted really well. When he was a babyface, he was likable. But man, are they finding a Kurt Angle-esque heel character to him. And I mean, the Angle thing isn't because of the wrestling background. It's just the comic touch. But with that credibility, that sort of sly smile, that sort of there when he does his bit where you buy in and you know he's enjoying himself. While producing the comedy, I think this is, the best he's been utilized. And there were times where I thought he'd be cut or just jobbing, and Vince McMahon would inaccurately see him as bland, and I don't know what to do with him. And I don't know if I'd call him a late bloomer in the sports entertainment realm, but he's becoming a go-to guy for the writers, and I think he's delivering every time. I think his comic touch, it works with me. I mean, his sense of humor is a style of humor that I really appreciate. So, and then Otis plays well off of him, and he plays well off of Otis. The don't boo education line gets me every time. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, his ring acumen cannot be denied, but as far as a character, I've never really latched onto him. Although here I agree, and specifically tonight, I think, accumulating this RK-Bro feud, but especially tonight, I am with the caller in that I feel like I turned a leaf on him tonight, just seeing all the different facets of what he's put together for this version of his character, and just figuring out the different ways to get heat in ways that put over his character in the interest of putting over his opponent, and the way he can be that careful balance of annoying and entertaining. The thank you that he keeps doing
yeah.
That's just so annoying, but also pretty funny. And little things like he's so cocky about his knowledge that he doesn't want to hear the definition of disillusion, so he assumes that it's dissolution and spells that word correctly, but then is wrong because he didn't want to hear out the whole question. Even down to things like he said Biodome is a great movie. That's a heel move right there. So, I'm all for it. I think tonight was when it crystallized for me, like, oh, wow, this guy's doing really well. Last week I might have said it's like, okay, they're giving him the spot. It's kind of surprising to me that after all these years they've decided to go with him. But this week I feel like I finally get it. And I agree with you about Otis as well. Otis is part of it.
And then Riddle and Orton. I think they did not originally envision them being together this long, but I think there's a genuine affection between them that comes through. I think the fans enjoy their chemistry. I think they enjoy the big brother Orton role and the playful Riddle who continues to win over Orton and bring out a different side of Orton. We have to sort of have a hazy memory of the heinous acts of Orton's past because it's very unrealistic and just sort of, I don't know, like the idea that Orton could ever go back to being a character like this in a way isn't unbelievable, because fans just always cheered him, even when he was a heel so often. And when WWE does things that are outside the realm in the normal rules of engagement of wrestling angles, they push things too far with Orton sometimes. It's sort, you know, just don't buy it because it's WWE and they don't really follow up. So all that as a caveat aside, or just the Orton has been fun. He's been likable. Riddle has managed to loosen him up and bring out this other side in him. And tonight was, I thought, another good example. And then Orton kind of slyly saying, "Hey, I smoke pot too, everybody." At least that was my personal interpretation. I don't want to spread rumors, Tom, but I think that's what Randy was getting at, in a state where, of course, it is legal and there's no shame. That's why just seeing these four. And I, you know, Tom Martin gave me a hard time in the fix saying, you know, that I was looking forward to this if it was, you know, somewhat clever and I didn't know it would be a 3-part series. And this week was fun. It worked for me. I thought these four got a chance to kind of show off, but Riddle and Orton too. I want to give them their just due.
Yeah, how dare you cast aspersions on Randall Orton? I say this after being the guy who was always defending Randy in the in general the Orton Fiend feud. It became very long in the tooth and definitely reached a point about halfway through where it wasn't working for me anymore. But I did vocalize a number of times on this show my defenses for it, and part of it was that it seemed like Randy was into it and it was something that he wanted to do and something that he was finding rewarding and maybe even having fun with. And he gave an interview recently, which I believe I read it on the Torch as excerpted by Zach Haydorn. I may be misattributing that, but I think that's where I saw it.
We'll
where
go
he,
with it. In fact, we'll even say We'll say pwtorch.com. I mean, if the therapist Tom in a session with Alexa Bliss is going to say wwshop.com, get the whole URL, then I'm the whole domain. Then you know we're going to do that too here.
There you go. I read it as he would deliver it. I read it at pwtorch.com.
Yes.
Just to make sure every little part of it has to be enunciated slowly. It was something about he said, like, look, I was just trying to make chicken salad out of what they were giving me. I was, you know, they're trying to tell me to burn alive a dead guy. I'm like, all right, let me see if I can get the audience to believe it.
It's like what John Moxley told me. He's like, I would push against things they gave me, but once I knew it was going to happen, it's my job to make the best of it.
It did echo that for sure. But I agree that here it seems that much more true that not only does it seem like Randy's having fun with this, but if he wasn't by this point, you think that he might have pushed for, and I don't know, maybe that goes against him just, you know, his comments in the interview, just trying to make the best of what they give him. But it does kind of seem like at a certain point he'd be like, all right, hasn't this gone on long enough? But tonight, yeah, again, accumulation of the feud and everything, but tonight in particular did dash my prior concerns that they were, or I guess prior expectation that they were on the verge of breaking up. Although, because they seem like they're more together and more in sync than ever right now, of course, that's usually the best time to break up. But I'm no longer predicting it.
I'm not ruling out Riddle winning the Elimination Chamber and taking on Bobby Lashley at WrestleMania at this point.
Yeah, well, you know, they put the lip service out there. They had Randy talking about it. They had him, you know, in the scene with Riddle, with the name Riddle in the sentence with WWE Championship main eventing WrestleMania, which was probably better than just doing like a floating head of Riddle going oh man, it would be really cool to main event WrestleMania, bro. It, like having Randy say that to him and him going, oh wow, probably worked better. But they don't generally put energy out there that they don't intend to capitalize on. Everything is a promotion. So yeah, that's a good observation.
I know there were some reports that have been disputed and I think accurately so that Riddle was going to win the Rumble. And that initial report could have been a misinterpretation of a leak of something that gave the impression Riddle would be getting a title shot at WrestleMania, and they thought it would, that the misinterpretation of some publicity was, oh, he must have won the Rumble. He's going to win the Rumble, and somebody gambled, not thinking, well, maybe he's going to get that shot another way. I'm not ready to put my money on it. I'm just saying, you know, I wouldn't rule it out if some people are like, oh, no, they're not going to do that. And it makes sense. You know, I mean, Riddle's really popular thanks to RK-Bro and just in general. And, I mean, they haven't protected him a lot. He was just tossed around by Omos like he was a mid-carder. So there's things that sort of work against that in a logical way, but the way WWE operates, it might not be at all disqualifying from the theory being true. So, I would rather see that than Lesnar win and have a title versus title match. I'm not an advocate for merging the belts. I'm not an advocate for blending or merging the rosters. I understand there's pros and cons, you know, to both approaches and all that, but I would much rather see that the title stay separate and the brand stay as separate as possible. And
I guess that does fit in with the other point I was planning on making in relation to a different segment, but with the idea of they're very careful about what energy they put out there, what they're promoting, what words they use. It's a weird path to get there with Lesnar losing the title, even though it told the story of, you know, looping Reigns back in with him, but they keep on saying title versus title, and I just don't feel like they would keep saying that if they weren't going to deliver on it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I'm still perhaps naively thinking they're not going to deliver on that. I think they just want to make it plausible that Lesnar wins at the Chamber, because people would otherwise think he's not going to, because what are they going to do, a title versus title match? So they're like, well, let's just say we might do that. But I get what you're saying. You know, you're right. They don't like to put the energy out there and leave fans disappointed over something that's a big deal, and it might work. But I guess if Riddle is winning, I think he's popular enough that fans wouldn't be deflated that they're not getting a title versus title match. I think they'd think, awesome, Riddle's going to get a shot against Bobby Lashley, and that explain also why Lashley is, you know, staying heel, if that's kind of their long-term plan, even if, you know, tonight in Denver he was cheered a bit. And we have to keep in mind, too, Lesnar wasn't supposed to win that WWE title. Like, that was just that's a detour we should erase from history when trying to project what WWE had in mind on this road to WrestleMania. You know, Lesnar was not going to be WWE champion, and I assume I've run it by some people in WWE, and I mean, you know, roundabout way have told me, yeah, I mean, that's, we think or we know that's what's going to happen is, you know, that Lashley's going to beat Big E at the Rumble one-on-one, and all logic when you kind of work your way backwards points to that. So I don't think Lesnar was going to be WWE champ, and so it's been everything's been kind of up, you know, mixed up because of the COVID situation with Roman and the audible they called, but I think things are kind of falling back into line. But I would rather have lots of things that seem like possibilities for what they're doing. In fact, they paid lip service to AJ, you know, that he regrets his last performance in the Rumble. They're talking about that in commentary. I wouldn't at all hate AJ Styles as a babyface taking on Bobby Lashley winning the Chamber. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger on Austin Theory, but he's hanging out with Vince McMahon, and, you know, who knows? And then Seth is always, a contender to be in the title picture, and he's putting a scenario out there that this is something he hasn't accomplished yet. So I think they're doing a good job giving, again, the phrase I use a lot is give fans a story to believe in. Even if, you know, analysts who study and know things and can ascertain things and connect dots and know how Vince McMahon operates and there's leaks here and all that, you know, we can often eliminate with high accuracy certain scenarios, but WWE's job isn't to pay attention to us. Their job is to play to the masses and give everybody who is a fan of each wrestler a reason to think that there's hope without overpromising, where then they're just deflated. And I think they're doing a good job with that at this point. It's one of the things I appreciated about tonight's show was, even though there wasn't a big new development, we kind of knew who were in the matches. They gave us a week to kind of take a deep breath and let things absorb everything that got set up last week. And then they added some strength to those storylines.
Agreed. For all those reasons and more, it is shaping up to be a very intriguing Chamber match.
We'll go back to William. Thanks for listening to us and bringing up that topic. Anything else you want to respond to that or bring up something new?
Just wanted to add a little bit and say that, so echo something that you said, which was that, yeah, we were seeing, again, a little bit of a comedic side to Otis. And I feel like for a little while there, he was just being serious, and we were supposed to be like intimidated by him, and it was just not working. But this new character direction for the two of them is just it's great. I feel like, you know, I want to root for them in a meta way, but if I were there in attendance, I'd be having a lot of fun just booing them, and that's what you want from a heel, I think. So, yeah, a great on them.
William, let me pause you briefly there because I want to throw it to Tom. William made a good point there, which they were trying to get people to think of Otis as a badass, and it was just I wasn't buying it either. Like he could walk to the ring and look super serious. Just something about his face and what we know about his prior personality, and it just the transition didn't click. And I think having him be Gable's sidekick in a way, but still threatening in the ring, but more just feeling authentically Otis is a better way to go. I think they were fighting a big headwind, trying to turn him into like this vicious heel who was to be feared because he was mean, especially because Gable is more of a comedy figure, you know, more comedic. I don't want to call him a comedy figure, but more comedic in his tone too.
Oh yes, absolutely. And you nailed it when you said authentically Otis, because that's exactly what they're doing. They're letting him slide back to heavy machinery Otis while still maintaining the heel role as assisted by Gable's characterization. So yes, he's a much more believable and much more entertaining figure for it.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, William. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, and just real quick, I recently saw like this Instagram post from Gable, and he was talking about how, you know, how great it is to be tag team champions with Otis. And something that I didn't even know is that they trained together for the Olympics. So it's overall, I think, like a pretty good feel-good story. But not in a way where if I were there in the arena, I would cheer for them. I think they still make it fun to boo for them. But one other topic I wanted to ask about is Damian Priest. I feel like he has this new character, and it was supposed to add direct dimension to his character, but now I feel like it did the opposite. He feels even more two-dimensional. I feel like before he was more or less authentically himself, and now he's just like a cartoon Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and it feels like whatever momentum he had, it did the opposite, and instead of adding something to him and taking him to another level, I feel like it's taking him down. What do you guys think? In hindsight, was this a good idea to try to go a different direction with him? Or would you have stuck course and maybe see where his previous character took you, if like maybe he would have been able to land somewhere with that?
Yeah, I think until this week, it would have been too early to start drawing, you know, conclusions or strong opinions, because it was still in the formative stages of where they were going and how it was going to work out. I understand that it seemed like he sort of hit a ceiling that was just a notch short of being a top-tier guy with what they were doing with him, with Bad Bunny and just kind of the cool, easygoing, you know, babyface who you just imagined was going clubbing but might be the kind of guy, you know, as a babyface who would stand up for a guy who some drunk guy was picking on. And you know, like there was sort of that vibe to him, but it wasn't electrifying crowds. It didn't seem on the trajectory to reach the highest hopes that they had, I think, reasonable expectations for him to reach. So I think they decided to gamble and add this more concrete twist to his persona. It's felt manufactured and clunky in the sense that, well, he bring out the Damien and, oh, look at the temper, and some of the match finishes were sort of eye rolling. And I think that worked against him. I'm not at a point, Tom, where I'm ready to draw a conclusion with the benefit of 2020 hindsight that this isn't working out or that it would have been better to stay the course. But I'm acknowledging that I think the course he was on wasn't a surefire course that they were crazy to give up. This isn't like a Becky Lynch situation where some people are like, are they crazy? Becky is, you know, it's Becky Lynch and she could have been the lead babyface. And why would you work against that? I don't think they were giving up a surefire thing with Priest to that level. What have you thought? And kind of, you can date it back to, you know, pre-main roster for him.
Yeah. You and I have agreed previously that for all the positives he brings, the natural cool factor, in my opinion, he showed on NXT, I never could even put my finger on exactly how he pulled it off, but just subtleties in playing both heel and face that he excelled at, and I always bought him in the roles he was at, even if it felt like he had a bit of a ceiling. And his push going into the main roster was really impressive, but it was not, for all the reasons you're saying, it was not objectionable that they wanted to try to give him something a bit more concrete to define him if they wanted to break through the ceiling that he seems to naturally have at every promotion he works at. So he's clearly being produced to overact. He's trying to sell it to the nosebleeds, even though most people are watching in extreme close-up in HD now, and that's why his subtleties worked before, but now it's anything but subtle. And it's silly that I don't know if they're going as far as calling the other side of him the priest. Obviously, that's the visual connotation of the graphic they put on the screen when he comes out, but calling it the Damien is extremely silly. But the main issue I feel I have with it right now, and while also feeling the way you are that it's too soon to call, is that they are already now using it not as his Hulk up anymore, but as his, as they put it tonight, Kryptonite. And there's no, at least as far as I can tell, there's no real story being told. It doesn't feel like he's on a journey. It still just feels like this is a characterization they've decided on, and he's just going to keep coming out there as the U.S. champ and either win or lose because of the Damien. And it feels like it would have been advisable to actually craft a story for it.
I think where they're going is that he is veers into being Damien. His temper comes out late in the match, and it's too late, and he's not all in. And so I think the storyline, and I could be wrong, but I think the storyline all along has been he's got this temper and he's been fighting it. And when he goes heel, he's going to stop. It's because he decided to stop fighting it, that he's just going to go all in and be this temperamental evil side of him is going to be 100% him. No more split personality. And he's going to start to have more success and be more vicious and be more threatening because he has given up on the old, you know, chill, cool, Bad Bunny's my friend version of Damien Priest. And so I think that's where they're heading. I don't know how clear or competent the storyline is being told at this point, but my thought all along has been that's where they're heading. And I don't see any reason to think that's not still where they're heading.
Yeah, and that may well be the case. I just wonder if giving him a foil, giving him an agitator to work against, someone who's verbalizing what's going on to him, like a Miz or a different time, a Cesaro, a different time just because Cesaro's a babyface right now. But, you know, if giving him that might have been more advisable for – yes, that story that they are kind of trying to tell. I said there's no story, but I guess in that sense I meant like in a feud sense. But yes, I just wonder if that would have been optimal for a presentation for this.
If only they had, you know, wrestling managers and somebody could get in his head and turn him. William, back to you. Any follow-up or another topic?
Yeah, another topic. One that you guys already kind of talked about, that Lita and Becky segment, I'm in agreement that was pretty good, and I'm really looking forward to the match. I think one of the lines that I really like from Becky, she said something like, without Lita, there would be no Becky Lynch, but now that there's a Becky Lynch, there can be no Lita. I thought that was pretty good.
Because she had been a babyface up until that moment, and that's when she sort of crossed into the dark side, Becky.
Exactly, yeah. And I think this is kind of obvious to point out, but I just, you know, I was thinking about it because I was recently watching the Stone Cold show with Becky, that interview where they were talking about how Becky went from working with main event talent like Ronda and Charlotte to try and build people like Lacey Evans, and Austin just went like, that shouldn't be your job. It shouldn't be up to you. And that's kind of like a situation that I think they put Becky a lot of times where she has to build people up, like Liv Morgan or Doudrop or, you know, et cetera. And one of the reasons why, you know, this feels big time is because Lita herself is an established star. There is a little bit of, you know, Becky having to remind maybe some of the newer viewers that Lita is this legend. But
right.
Yeah, it just, they're starting from a better place than they would normally do with other matches. But overall, what are your expectations for the match, for the actual in-ring stuff? Because I know, you know, Lita, she hasn't been allotted in the ring in recent years. Did you guys get a sense from her Rumble performance that, you know, it'll work out, it'll be fine, or did you see something that maybe there's reason to doubt, or was there just not enough to see there that we'll just have to wait and see?
Tom, what do you think about that? A few things Dwayne brought up. What do you expect from the match based on what we've seen and her history? And the idea that, yes, fans are popping big for Lita, but Becky's sort of got the job to also establish who she is for newer fans who didn't live through that era and haven't gone back and watched it.
Yeah, I think we so often, as analysts in particular, we so often want to see the matches where the more established stars are building up and eventually putting over up-and-comers. But we, especially at this time of year, and I know we're talking Elimination Chamber and not Mania, but the money gets made when you put the biggest stars against the biggest stars. So I'm with that for sure. And of course, it seems like I think we know per her own words that this is what Becky wanted to be doing, at least the role that she's had with people like Liv Morgan, that is. But then we get Lita, and, you know, like we're talking about hooking sci-fi viewers, and that's where I would think, okay, well, maybe you wanted to open the show with that, because if somebody saw Lita, maybe they would think, oh, she's back? Oh, let me check this out. And if we who watch every week are going to say, like, oh, well, that's not a good reason to want to watch. Well, that's probably what's going to hook somebody, though. Somebody, you know, a lapsed fan. But as far as educating newer fans to her significance, I think the video package that they showed tonight was really nice, and it rang true for, you know, for people who, you know, just speaking for myself, having watched her career in real time in the late 90s, early 2000s, it all rang true and made her feel like a big deal. And they hit graphics from it several times throughout the night, building up to the segment. But as far as her, what I expect from her performance, just based on her recent showing in the Rumble, all I can say, because so much of both Rumbles was just people working weak strikes in the corner while the focus was elsewhere, or just working really long rest holds in the corner while the focus was elsewhere. Like more so than in a lot of battle royals and Royal Rumbles. This was really egregious this year. And so for whatever I did actually catch of her performance, I will say that it was at least better than what I recall seeing from her prior Rumble appearance and from I believe she wrestled at Evolution, but whatever, it may just be the Rumble that I'm thinking of, where it seemed like maybe she had lost some chops or, you know, just out of practice. But hey, the moonsault looked good tonight. It didn't look like she was going to land on her head. She landed good and square right where she was supposed to. And so for whatever those stray observations are worth, I'm optimistic that it's not going to be like Becky carrying Lita and we're going to be concerned that Lita's going to give herself a concussion. I'm expecting it to be an all right, maybe 10-minute affair.
I agree with what you said for the most part till the end. I will still be worried about Lita getting a concussion, and I think Becky will be carrying her. But I am optimistic, based on everything else you said, or matching what everything else you said, that Lita will be in shape, and she is a natural athlete. She'll be almost 47. She'll be within days of turning 47 when WrestleMania takes place, I guess. But this is more about the Chamber. Nevertheless, she's almost 47 years old, and you know, she hasn't had a lot of ring time, and I don't think the Rumble, William, was a great sample size to get an idea for the reasons that Tom pointed out. The moonsault, I mean, I'm still worried she's going to come up a little short. It's going to be awful. I mean, but I feel that way about people in their prime sometimes too. You know, doing moves like that if they don't just get a ton of height routinely. And she just seems to barely, you know, hit the landing safely. So, that, you know, so I mean, I'm still going to be a little bit on edge for the match. That said, I think she's in really good hands with Becky. And I think they'll map out a match that's smart. You know, it's Saudi Arabia. The history there is, you know, maybe it'll feel different now that it's a primary, it's taking the spot of an old primary pay-per-view. And it's not just a Thursday afternoon, you know, whatever, you know, money grab. That it's actually, you know, built central storylines are being built around it, and it's historically relevant. Maybe the work will be different because they know they'll have a larger audience, and what they're doing is in the WWE realm more important. But there's also a chance they don't try to do anything too big because one, they don't want Lita to get hurt, and two, they don't want Becky to get hurt going into WrestleMania.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom. Yep.
Oh no, just agreeing with you. Yeah,
yeah.
Good points.
William, back to you if you want to have any closing words before we move on here.
No, that's pretty much all I had, guys. Thank you for taking the call. Have a
great,
good rest of your week.
Great, appreciate it. Thanks for calling. William always has good good topics, good to open with him, although it might be good to not open with him so that other people can get on before we spend so much time with William's good topics. But keep calling William, and we'll keep going to you. Kyle is up next. Kyle in Baltimore.
Hey.
Welcome. What's on your mind about tonight's show? Welcome. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. So I want to go to the Becky Lita segment itself and just talk about just Lita herself and then how – and also comparing this match with Charlotte and Lita, Trish Stratus in 2019 as well. This is how interesting it is, kind of the same in some ways too. It's, so with me, when both Lita and Trish was in WWE, that was like 2004, 2003. I was like seven or six at that time when they were around. And so of course I didn't really know of them. I didn't know them until I started watching wrestling in 2008, 2009. I was 11 or 12. So. And then when it was, I think the time I remember seeing them before live on TV was back in 2012 and 2018 and 19. So pretty much when I was either in my mid-teens or early 20s. So when it comes to seeing, So I just reminded me about the match that Charlotte and Trish had at SummerSlam, and I was thinking to myself, why is this match not happening on a different place and in a normal state, you know, in the USA, whatever? But well, I was still going to watch it, still going to enjoy it. But just watching it, I really did. But I did enjoy their back and forth stuff, and I think Ella Becky's awesome, and I think she's just. Whether she's a heel or a face, she's just great on the mic, and I love what she has to say overall. She's just really good, and she's like Sasha to me, where she can't say anything wrong that I will be negative to her because I won't, because Becky Lynch, I never will. But just watching, I was thinking to myself, this could hopefully be a good match. Hopefully, just their back and forth has been really good and entertaining, and I've been enjoying that as well. And what do you think about just that whole dynamic? Because I just felt like it was cool, but in this situation with having Becky in this generation and now and Lita from that generation, where I didn't really watch her at that time, it was more Becky and the women now pretty much are there now currently. But I just think about that entire situation, kind of retarded about it, but that aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what this is displacing that they'd be doing otherwise, Tom, but. If, you know, we talked about it at the top, Lita seems like somebody who's deserving of this spot. Just based on the idea that she didn't get big moments during a post diva era boom period. And she was popular enough to deserve this. And there's a overlap with Becky and her fandom and the backstory there that she talked about. I think it works. And I think the chemistry's fun, and, you know, it's like Trish coming back. It's I mean, Trish wasn't great on the mic, or she wasn't, you know, great in the ring, but she was enough who she used to be. Well, she was never great on the mic, but I guess that's part of being who she used to be. but there was a nostalgia and popularity that she had that clicked well enough. And I think Lita got one of the biggest pops of the night tonight. We didn't have anybody from Denver who let us know they were attending and could be our on-site correspondent tonight. It would have been interesting to get an assessment of her pop compared to others on the show, but people really reacted to her music. So overall, I think it's a cool chapter to have in WWE.
I did write down for myself if there was going to be a live correspondent that I wanted to ask specifically, not just who got the biggest pop, but specifically if Lita got the biggest pop, because it did sound that way, and you could see it at the Rumble as well. They've gone through weird phases with the sweetening of the crowd noise lately, where it seemed like after the Thunderdome, they got really good at it and really smooth at it. But lately, it just sounds like somebody turning on a hairdryer, and you can just look at the crowd and see what's fake and what's not. But with Lita, you can see the people reacting, and the sound is different. And so it really does feel genuine. And yeah, I think I would just be repeating myself from the top. I'm just happy to see these women, you know, and Trish when she did her part as well, although right now I'm staring at a Google image search of that SummerSlam match because I could not remember it, unfortunately. But yeah, when that happened as well, just the general memory of her returning that year and for Evolution as well, it does feel like deserved spots that simply weren't available during their heyday. And they were the talents that and are the talents that if those spots had been available during their heyday, they absolutely would have belonged in them. And even on a lesser scale, I know the Women's Royal Rumble was just full of all kinds of guest appearances, but certain ones do stand out. And like, I loved seeing Ivory come out and get a brief but a relatively big moment for herself there, and just getting the respect from at least the online community that I saw from, because you go back to her era, which mostly predates Trish and Lita, but she was in the era of the swimsuit model, which, I mean, Trish and Lita were too. Come on, I mean, Divas and Hedonism and all that, but especially there in the 90s, Ivory was a consummate wrestler tasked with carrying other people who were just swimsuit models with absolutely no skills whatsoever. And it's just cool seeing her be able to enter a Royal Rumble and get some mic time as her Right to Censor character and all that. So I'm very much enjoying these returns.
All right, Kyle, any follow-up or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, so just in general, just looking forward to the match itself. Sure, it'll be fun. It'll be a cool first time ever match to see, so I'm looking forward to it. So with the chamber itself, with the women's chamber, that was announced earlier today. I didn't really think they were going to do that, but okay. So and then having, I guess it does make sense because since Ronda decided to pick Charlotte, which I think that's still a little bit questionable, but whatever. It's, you know, having, you know, Bianca and Liv and having Deidre and Rhea and Nikki was there. I think it could be a good match itself. And I was thinking about when I saw it as a match perspective, seeing it should be a good match. I'm thinking probably Bianca's going to win because it makes storyline sets over what happened at SummerSlam and everything like that. But, and I was thinking, like, so to me, I'm like, I'm trying to think in terms of like how will, I mean, I know that that's pretty much the main story of what happened at SummerSlam with Becky and Bianca, that happened at SummerSlam, this whole 5 second thing of her having Becky win. It makes logical sense for her to win, which fine. It's just, to me, it's like the fact that, I don't know, to me, I'm thinking to myself, I wish they just sacrificed, I said this last week, I wish they sacrificed Bianca Belair for Ronda to face Becky and not Charlotte and not sacrifice Sasha, because it seems that, I don't know, that's what I'm just being, at this point, I guess it doesn't matter, they're doing the match now, so it doesn't matter what I say at this point, but I just still think to that situation, I don't know, I feel like in general, this is gonna, that's how I feel like what's gonna happen in general. I said before, it's gonna be well, I didn't say Ron. Well, now this could be Becky and Bianca and Ronda and Charlotte, and probably Becky's not going to be in the main event, but Charlotte is. Well, because it's whatever. I guess Charlotte's the bigger star than Becky, which I guess half true, but I don't know. What do you think about that entire situation, that Nelson, about the Women's Chamber match happening and all that that I said?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the bigger newsworthy aspects of the show, Tom, is the Women's Chamber match. The wrestlers announced Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Doudrop, Nikki A.S.H., and a mystery wrestler. This does, you know, create the path to determining who will earn a shot against Becky at WrestleMania.
I forgot about that as well. I want to get to that as well, because it made me think about, also when I saw that as well, it made me think about Brock Lesnar just entering the chamber just because. So what if say Sasha Banks wanted to be in it just because it's apparently, since everyone's going to challenge different brands, because Rollins Reigns face each other at the Rumble, and Rollins is a Raw star. What will be different if Sasha will enter that match just because that's what they've been doing the last 2 weeks? It may not happen, but what do you think about this? That's my whole thought too. So, but anyway, you can continue with that.
Sure. No. I mean, exactly. And so they have the mystery spot, the sixth spot, Tom, and they're not going to put the three question marks, you know, who's it going to be, if it's going to be Dana Brooke. With all due respect to Dana Brooke, she's been lovely and likable lately at, you know, the 24/7 level. So it does seem like, you know, they've added the obvious names who aren't, you know, Tamina's in the 24/7 realm right now. It's not going to be her. So to me, it's got to be like Alexa Bliss, Asuka, a returning Lacey Evans, a returning Bayley, or as Kyle brings up, Sasha Banks jumping brands. I don't know if she has Paul Heyman advocating for her behind the scenes to make it a storyline plausible, but her name, you know, is worth having in the mix. So your thoughts on the announcement of the Women's Chamber, who's already locked in, and especially that mystery spot, and who you, if did I leave out any name that you think might be entered?
The only name you left out was Queen Zelina, but that she was the one I was going to use as my example to illustrate the same thing you're illustrating, is that, okay, I guess she's conspicuous by her absence, but also, is it really going to be Queen Zelina as a surprise entrant? So while I am hotly anticipating all three returns of Lacey, Bayley, and Asuka, I love all three of them, and it's just like, come on, get them back on my TV. I did have the same thought as Kyle, in that the surprise that WWE might think is the most effective would be someone from the other brand. And who's left without anything to do? It's Sasha. And you can get your Sasha and BB moment while BB is on route to very likely win the chamber match. It's felt for months now that she has been on track to get her rematch with Becky at WrestleMania, and that's just like the longer story that they've been telling with those two, is how I felt before Lita had her pre-Rumble spot on Raw that started me thinking that she would be a good winner for the Rumble. BB was my pick to repeat, and I thought for the fifth Women's Rumble, why not? I mean, with the Men's Rumble, it took them till four until somebody won them back-to-back. Of course, that was during the Hogan era when he was winning everything. So I do agree that it seems inevitable Bianca is headed for that spot. And that Sasha is the most likely to enter the chamber. Alexa did come to mind as well, but I'm not sure if they have done all of these video packages just to have the character return in front of a Saudi Arabian audience to lose.
Good point. What if she wins?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, I mean, boy, I don't want to eviscerate your point, but in your defense, you're thinking, well, she's not going to be the one to win, so then she wouldn't be in this match. But if she is in the match, I think, to back up your point, it's a pretty good indication she's going to win, or there's some other storyline. I guess with her, she could enter and lose in the sense that it would further her character right. Because of something with, you know, Lily and her head not being straight. So actually, like with others, like I don't think they'd bring back Bailey in Have Her Loose. I don't think they'd have Sasha necessarily enter in Have Her Loose unless they're just kind of cold on Sasha. They want to get what they can out of her, but they think she's got one foot out the door into other projects and they're not WWE projects and she's a headache and, you know, whatever stuff is going on with her that management has with her. So I could see her entering but not winning, actually. Bailey, I think they would save, you know, if she were ready. And if she enters, I think then she wins and she's a babyface and she takes on Becky. So, yeah, again, kind of like the men's. I mean, there's enough scenarios that you can come up with to at least, you know, talk yourself into some drama in that match beyond just Bianca winning.
Yeah, and as a fan, I would love to see that for Bailey. It's tough to tell from she's constantly posting rehab stuff on social media, but it's tough to tell exactly where she's at in the rehab process. But I would love to see that. But yeah, I had the same thought regarding Alexa and doing some Lily thing with her, and gosh, it's just part of me is just like, can we please just get an older version of Alexa back? But also, why would they, if they were bringing her back to do that, they could have just brought her back and not acknowledged Lily at all. And they're doing all of these ridiculous therapy sessions. They're not even ridiculous. They're just dull and unbelievable therapy sessions. And it almost feels like they've just got an overstock of Lily dolls on WWEshop.com and they need to move them. But yeah, I think the question becomes these characters who are being focused on, like Sasha is someone who I agree with you can safely lose the match even as a surprise entrant. But the question becomes, who are the people who aren't going to have a match at WrestleMania that they are still going to want to get on the show in some way? And Alexa might be one that they can have on the show, but they can have her doing what Bailey did last year and just having multiple backstage segments or maybe one segment out in front of the crowd that's not a match. But since she's – I don't know. That's where my mind's at with, like, who are they focusing on that almost certainly is going to be on the WrestleMania card because they're getting this TV time leading up to it.
Yeah. All right, Kyle, back to you.
Yeah, with Alexa, too, I feel like this whole journey back to Ross thing, I think it's taking too long for me anyway. I think I'm being a little – I'm just being the one who's being impatient of this. Tired. I don't like this whole therapy thing. I think it's unnecessary. But I'm thinking to myself now this – I thought that she was going to come in the Rumble. She didn't. So now I'm thinking it's going to be – maybe after the Chamber before WrestleMania, I'm thinking she's going to have a feud with someone. That's what I'm thinking when she's going to come back to Raw itself, because clearly these segments are pre-taped, looks like. And so that's what I'm guessing is going to be probably after the Chamber before WrestleMania. She's going to come back to feud with someone or even if she's going to be in the Chamber itself, which I don't know if I see that. I just think it's going to be after the Chamber before WrestleMania is when I think Alexa's going to come out and hopefully be the normal Alexa Bliss, like just like she was back in 2017, which I kind of do miss. So hopefully that's the whole goal of this whole therapy stuff that she's been doing the last few weeks. So hopefully that's what the goal is, I hope, I guess. And I guess we'll see with that. But that's just it. I will see what happens headed into the Chamber. It feels like a who cares show because it's just I wish the show didn't happen so that we could just focus on WrestleMania so we can just move on from that. But whatever, I guess we'll see what happens. But that's it, the show call.
Thanks, Kyle. Be careful what you wish for, because if there wasn't a pay-per-view and we were only talking Mania, it'd be good to fast forward 6 weeks then. I mean, by the time, you know, mid to late March comes around, we're going to be ready to see what's happening after Mania because, you know, there wasn't enough in between to kind of shake things up. Tom, as serious as possible, your analysis of what they're doing with Alexa Bliss and Lily in the therapist office in terms of how it's being filmed, how the breadcrumbs or hints that they're giving to where they're going, is it well done? Is the length just right? So if you don't like it, it's not, you know, you don't have the incentive to turn the channel and not come back. But if you do like it, are they taking advantage of Alexa's talent. Just, you know, your kind of evaluation of this kind of week after week, little drip drip of her comeback, and then finally a prediction on where you think it's heading.
Oh boy. A prediction. I have been trying to figure that part of it out. I don't think I've quite cracked it. I think saying that she might have some backstage segments at WrestleMania is the closest I'm going to come there. And, you know, Alexa has excelled at absolutely everything that WWE has asked of her. She's really a good little actress in that regard, especially when she has something like this she can sink her teeth into. Although, of course, I prefer the, quote, goddess version of her character, and find it much more effective as much as I tried to be forgiving of this when they introduced it. But yeah, I think I have not liked these segments, but I think one of the reasons is that even though I don't like what they are, it also feels like they're taking way too long to get to wherever they're going, because it is such a little bit of a drip at a time. I feel like the segments themselves should be longer. Give us more of these therapy sessions to try to figure out what story they're telling, because it seems like we're still in the same place. She is sad that Lily got torn up. And that's basically, it's just a different version of that every single week. And again, if this was going to end, as much as I would like to see it too, if this was going to end with an older version of Alexa coming back on the other side of it, they wouldn't have even reintroduced Lily at all. I think they would have just acted like it never happened and just brought her back, and not really, like, maybe a vague line from Corey Graves would have referenced it for the people who remember, and they're like, oh, I see what he did there. But I don't think they would have put Lily on TV again. And that's why I say, like, it just seems like maybe they produced too many dolls that didn't sell and they want to get them out the door. But yeah, I don't know. Like, the therapist actor is terrible. I don't know. What else can I say? These segments are just really bad.
Do you draw any conclusions from her embracing the replica and then crying when it was taken away, and then giving examples of her showing more restraint with her temper and being proud in a way that her therapist is like, well, I think we still have more to work on? Is this week's developments give you any more of an indication of, like, where this ends? I mean, I agree with you in the sense I don't think it's clear and obvious, but I think people are interested enough in her because they're invested in her to kind of want to see where this goes. And I think they sort of have a timeline for when they want her to debut. I don't think this will be like Veer, where, you know, there's still skits, or they take a 3 or 4 week break and then bring skits back again. So did this week give you any hints about where it's going?
Veer, I can't be held back much longer. Oh, okay, buddy. I agree that Alexa has a lot of fans, and we believe in her, you know, I among them, and we believe in her, you know, whether the character's working for us or not. I thought it was funny that each story that she told today of her either exhibiting restraint or not had to do with somebody cutting in front of her. two examples in traffic and one in a grocery store. Although in the grocery store, of course, that ended with her beating the woman up, and then she left. So
with a loaf of bread.
With a loaf of bread.
I mean, it could have been a French loaf, you know, and it could have hurt.
So I'm really just pulling this out of thin air. It just occurred to me as you were pitching the question. Maybe that becomes her Damien, that becomes her Hulk up, that she, you know, she gets a look on her face and Corey Graves or Byron Saxton can say, like, oh gosh, she's seeing Lily. And then she gets angry and wins the match.
What if she and Damien get together and she brings,
there we go.
Yeah. It can be a dangerous pair who channel each other's evil sides. All right. Very good. I want to grab a couple emails here. JB from Detroit emailed and said, I think what Chad Gable is doing is incredible right now. He has me somewhat legitimately invested in these academic competitions that Alpha Academy and RK-Bro are doing. The gimmick screams dumb and destined to fail, but Gable is holding the entire thing together and excelling with what he's being given. I'm impressed that he's able to go all in with this character and is actually showing strong range with it. I think the heat that he is getting is strong and real. That's not even mentioning that he's just an astounding wrestler between the ropes. As always, love the show and go VIP. What is Gable's upside here? You know, like, there's sort of the – I'm going to bring up MJF as a comparative point with Wardlow. The MJF doesn't want to clearly and isn't seen as the manager or spokesman for Wardlow or any of the people he's around. Like, MJF is making sure it's clear, and Tony Khan's making sure it's clear, he's a main event act in the world title mix. But that can happen sometimes with a really talented wrestler who's matched with somebody who's bigger and might fit the definition of a main event act more, and certainly – Otis, they had their eye on him for that role. Is Gable showing enough range where you could imagine him coming out of this getting like an actual push? Not he's entertaining and he's a spokesperson for Otis and he's a stepping stone for, you know, Riddle and Orton to do something more important right afterwards. Is he a Miz-era parent who could actually have a comedic role and be leaned on to fill a lot of TV time in the sports entertainment realm that WWE, where WWE looks for people in their realm to fit a certain role? Could he reach Miz level or even more because of his ring talent and maybe be Kurt Angle-esque, or is it just too late and he's been defined down enough that it's just not something WWE really does, where somebody wants her to find down. They don't really tell the story of them moving way up.
I think the part you said last rings the most true as far as what I'm thinking here, but I think I'll put it like this. Could he be a Miz-level player? It's definitely believable for him. I don't see it happening, and that then implies that I don't see a higher level realistically happening, not for lack of talent, just for how, you know, for what you said and how he's been defined down over the years. But I also did not see him and this Alpha Academy act becoming tag champions, especially going over RK-Bro. And I mean, I know the tag belts don't have any prestige level anymore, but I didn't even see that much, and I was wrong there. So maybe there's hope.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see him break the mold and move up because he's so good in the ring. The question is he always going to have that sort of grin? You know, the joy of performance, comedic heel grin that belies the idea of him being a badass threat at a top level. But, you know, if the King of Soft Style Miz can be, you know, multi-time champion in every category, maybe they can. I mean, he's about 6 years younger than Miz. And so I don't know how much longer Miz wants to do this. You know, with his ring style, he might be doing it for quite a while and he's making a lot of money and all that, but he's got young kids and maybe other opportunities. And, you know, I don't think wear and tear is going to be an issue with Miz. And I don't say that to be in any way, like, it's not meant to be snarky sounding. I just, you know, hasn't had a lot of injuries and WWE's schedule is way lighter than it used to be. So he could go on a while longer, but you can have a Chad on one brand and a Miz on the other too. So anyway, I don't know how some people who really like Chad Gable are going to be mad I'm comparing him to Miz, but in the way that Vince McMahon leans on people is what I mean.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are still people who get upset when it gets mentioned that The Miz is an absolute shoe-in for the Hall of Fame, for whatever that means anymore these days.
Right, yeah.
But it's like, I mean, come on, that was true years ago. The guys had such great longevity and consistency. And, you know, for my part of that, I always appreciate a safe worker. But I did get a kick out of Miz saying tonight, I've been here so long. Come on, when you get in the ring with me, you know what you're getting.
All right, up next, Jason from Australia, not the long-lost Jason from Australia, but Jason from Perth, Western Australia, says, "Hi, Wade and Tom. AJ Styles got a clean win over Damian Priest tonight, and they're booked to rematch for the U.S. title next week. Priest's new gimmick seems to have really fallen flat. Do you think they switch the belt next week? And if so, what do you predict for both guys at WrestleMania? Also, what we're just talking about. He says, Chad Gable's incredibly entertaining, and it's a shame WWE took this long to use him this way, on the main roster at least. But now they seem to know what he can do. What do you think his ceiling is? So, sorry for stealing your second question, Jason, but his ceiling, in short, is somewhere around Miz, and exceeding his ceiling, if that even is possible, would be getting a glimmer of what Kurt Angle got. But I don't see Chad as a world champion. That's why I say a glimmer. But, you know, a three-fourths Miz, one-fourth Angle with, you know, 5-6 years of really good matches and a more serious role that probably bounces between heel and face. As far as AJ and Priest, Tom, I mean, I think we're projecting onto Vince McMahon the idea that he thinks Priest is falling flat. Vince doesn't always agree with what viewers think is self-evident. and I think he's going to see the story through. That does not mean that AJ doesn't win the US title and Priest turns heel on him by going, you know, just vicious, and that they end up rematching at Mania sometimes, or at least at in Saudi Arabia at Elimination Chamber. There's, you know, feuds last longer in WWE than sometimes we think they could. So I could see that. I haven't thought too much more because I think they're just starting to fall into place a little more in terms of, you know, what the clear matches. Well, it's not even clear what the match will be at Mania for the WWE title. By the way, I hope there aren't like actual spoilers out there. You talked about the Women's Rumble thing and how that permeated. You know, I mean, people were practically knocking on people's doors, going, "Hey, mm-hmm. WWE fan, do you want to know and have the finish ruined for you 3 hours before the event starts?" Like that kind of show off reporting, I just wish would go away. I just think, and I mean, it's you know. There's businesses people are running and they want to get the clicks and they make, you know, probably thousands of dollars for running that. But it still sucks. I just, you know, I don't want to know the ending of my favorite TV series on the season finale 3 hours before I watch it. I think we're at a point where wrestling has gotten past that and it shouldn't be applauded that reporters get scoops and report that. But, you know, and I hear things and I don't want to report it. And I ask people not to tell me. Like, there's people who know future stuff I talk to, and I do not seek out that stuff, and I don't want to know, and I make it clear. So anyway, that's a little sidebar rant. But my point is I hope we don't find out who's winning the Elimination Chamber before it happens. So hopefully that doesn't happen. And then same thing with AJ and Damian. You know, I want to have a thought that maybe AJ wins the Rumble, and they're going to go – or I'm sorry, the Chamber, and they go that direction. But – winding back to Jason's question, AJ Priest, where does it go from here, Tom?
Yeah, and regarding the spoilers, I've told you before that's the main reason why I ended up gravitating toward the Torch as pretty much my sole source of wrestling news and analysis because of the avoidance of spoilers. I think it was, I want to say 2015, Brock versus Rollins when The Undertaker returned at the end of the match and Rollins just disappeared. It was spoiled earlier in the day that Undertaker was returning, and I then didn't enjoy the event. And I was like, you know what? I've got to cut this out. But you're absolutely right about, you know, knocking on doors for the Ronda finish, and even to the specificity of it coming down to Ronda and Charlotte as the final two. I have so many like blocks and mutes and privacy this and that up on my social media, and I still saw it multiple times throughout the day.
I saw an airplane flying over my house with a banner that said what the finish of the Rumble is going to be. I'm like, settle down, people. Let us enjoy surprises.
Oh, my goodness. Smoke signals. but yeah, I think that going 50-50 with Styles Priest heading into a match at Elimination Chamber seems the most believable, as you laid out. I had the same thought as the email was being read. I must have missed that they had booked a title match for next week, but that makes sense. Styles is just going on a real nice run here. I still haven't nailed down exactly how they want us to pronounce his name after they cycled through however many pronunciations, but Amos, Omos.
I do Omos, think it's right, but it's like there's six ways to say it, and it's split whatever 100 divided by 6 is. like, what is that, 18, I think, something like 18. So, no, like 17 point something, I don't know. Announcers, like, you hear them say it differently. But I think it's Omos, based on, at some point, I figured the people who would know best said it that way, and I don't remember who they were, but that's what I'm going with, Omos. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, so of course.
I still don't know how to say Omicron. Omicron.
Oh, yeah. For so long, of course, it seemed like, oh, well, AJ and the tall guy are destined for a WrestleMania match, and now Omos just, it seems like he's going to get the Braun Strowman spot of not having a match at WrestleMania, even though he's the obligatory big guy for the rest of the year. Or whatever he does will be more of a novelty than anything. But AJ seems to really be benefiting from it, because he's getting a nice little spotlight, even if this Priest thing hadn't turned into a miniature feud, assuming it will remain a miniature one. It was still just a highlight of the night, seeing them go up against one another. I thought that Theory KO was my match of the night, but this was right there. And I think it's one of those things where, again, I'm trying to figure out trying to soothsay that Mania card, and I really would like to see Styles get a spotlight in a one-on-one feud, not necessarily over a title, but I suppose, you know, I could see it not necessarily with Damian Priest, because they would need more juice added to the feud, just like, you know, assuming it's going to be some Mysterio, combination of Mysterios versus The Miz and whatever at WrestleMania, it's like, okay, you're really going to need to add some more juice to this if you're going to stretch it out that long, assuming that is what the plan is. But I suppose I could see him winning the title and going to Mania, and that would be the story, that he's just defending the title. I'm just, you know, he's just a highlight of the show right now, with the focus he's getting. You always know you're going to get a quality segment when Styles is out there.
By the way, I meant to say this earlier, and a lot of people might be in your shoes and others who don't get Sci-Fi, and Raw will be on Sci-Fi again next week. There are streaming services that offer short, you know, 1 month or 7 day or 14 day trials for exactly this reason. Like, they know there's things that come up on a channel you don't get, and they want you to try their service and stick with it. I cut the cord with my cable company, and I've been through a couple streaming services, and I'm really happy with the one I'm using now. And I'm, you know, saving money, and I don't have a bunch of cable boxes, and I'm not renting crusty old remotes that other people had. You know, I love my Roku now. And so this is a chance to, like, break free and get a, you know, trial run with a streaming service. And then you won't miss Raw if you don't want to miss it. That's, Tom, what you did. And who knows, you might stick with the streamer that you went with if you like them. So I'm telling people who probably wouldn't have felt bad anyway, but don't feel bad taking advantage of a trial offer. And then you don't have to miss Raw next week if you don't want to, with the Olympic coverage that's going on and NXT too. Zach in Texas. It's no secret I hate the failed Becky Lynch heel turn, just as a matter of principle, and not one of these people who can go shrug, oh, well, this is what we're getting. My brain isn't wired that way. That said, the segment tonight with Lita was excellent. Becky killed it on the mic, and as the GOAT usually does, Lita, who doesn't look 46 at all, hits a better moonsault than Charlotte ever could. It's really just a shame I won't be able to see this match, because I refuse to watch those Blood Money shows. I still feel bad for Bianca Belair, though. She's obviously going to win the Elimination Chamber, but it already feels like a consolation prize given in place of the Rousey-Becky match. Should her re-crowning moment be marred like that? Zach in Texas sent that. If I didn't say so, I assume I did. So, Tom, let's say that Bianca Belair wins. And obviously she's going to be the odds-on – well, I shouldn't say obviously the odds-on favorite. I think at the moment she's the odds-on favorite. There could be reason things shift in the next couple of weeks. But if she wins – is this a consolation prize? Is it a consolation prize to not win the Rumble, but win the Chamber to earn your title match, regardless of the setting, but maybe especially because of the setting?
I mean, it gets into, ooh, do I want to evoke or invoke this name? It gets into sort of that CM Punk territory of, like, is this really something you should be that upset about? I mean, you're in the second most important match on the biggest show of the year against one of the biggest stars in The Undertaker. Why are you that pissed off, dude? So, yeah, would it have been cooler for her to win the Rumble? Absolutely. But still vying for and probably winning a title shot at the biggest show of the year across any promotion in a secondary big match in the elimination chamber, I still don't think you can turn your nose up at it. So for whatever that's worth. Yeah, no, I don't view it as a consolation prize. I think, again, I've viewed Bianca as being on this path for months. I will be very surprised if she does not end up wrestling Becky at WrestleMania. Yeah, I mean, only one person can win the Royal Rumble, except for that one year when two people did. But you know what I mean.
Yep. All right, a couple straggler topics here, and if you've got any time, I'll throw to you on it too. What do you make, if anything, of Alpha Academy beating Street Profits in the opener? It was Dawkins who lost, I believe, who took the pin. Do you make anything of that? Is this just a sign of Alpha Academy getting a push, or is this setting up the reverse psychology that WWE often does, where this means Street Profits are going to be getting a tag title shot or win the tag titles, and then Alpha Academy will have a win over them, and so it adds more drama? Do you make anything of it?
I was almost perplexed by it, and then I decided that it's nice the champions actually got to win a match. I think that it might have just been they were the ones who looked like the fools in the academic challenge, so since we're doing commercial-free and they're going to stay out there and we're segueing right into the next segment, let's give them the win. So we 50-50 it, I guess. But I guess in the end, I didn't really have too much problem with it because of WWE's booking leading me to feel like this doesn't actually define the Profits down at all.
And Bobby Lashley, we didn't talk much about him. He's out there, MVP and Lashley are talking about Brock Lesnar, and Lashley is framing his win as, hey, what mattered most is I was standing with a victory at the end. MVP saying Lashley didn't see any of this other stuff that allegedly went on that helped Lashley win. And Lashley going, you know, bring it on. We should have had a Bobby Lashley day. I'm going to show, I hope it comes down to me and you in the chamber, Brock, and you've disrespected me one last time. I mean, I think Lashley needed to have a moment to kind of gloat and underline his win and explain away the tainted nature of it, although it's also drawing attention to the tainted nature of it. Well, what do you think they were trying to accomplish, and how did they do in that regard?
I kind of feel for Lashley on this one. I totally respect and have for a while that it seems like when he came back to WWE, he put a whiteboard up on his wall and he wrote Brock Lesnar on it and he wrote WWE Championship on it. And he's willed that into being, and I'm happy for him, especially because right at the beginning, especially when he was sweating buckets trying to climb up to the top rope to wrestle Roman, I was just like, ooh, this isn't going to go well. And it has gone well for him. I just feel like he's a placeholder right now. And I was right there with it all along, and I still absolutely hear everything that you are so reasonably and astutely saying about, like, well, you know, Roman getting COVID shook things up, and they're still trying to get, you know, they had to work to get back on the path that they were originally planning on. But along the way, I just still have to wonder if they ended up falling in love with the idea of this title versus title match, and that's why they keep on having Brock say that. So for as perfectly fine as I felt this gloat session was, I kind of felt like the purpose and ultimately the sense that it gave me was just that MVP and Lashley are emptily trying to make it seem like this is in a state of permanence, but really in the back of their minds, they know that it's just going to be a brief reign before the belt bounces right back to Brock so he can carry it into Mania. And they can put it on a poster, title versus title.
Okay, another loose end from the show. Austin Theory. Tom, just want to get your thoughts on the transition of what he was doing at NXT and what he showed to what he's doing now, what you make of the story they're telling with McMahon and Theory, and tied into tonight with Owens getting a win that I assume isn't burying Austin Theory, because the tone of the commentary is really building him up as a future star, a pillar, one might say, of the next generation of wrestlers in WWE. But yet Owens got a three count. And then, I want to ask about the follow-up after that. But go ahead, your thoughts on Austin Theory, McMahon, and tonight's finish.
Well, as I've said before, I mean, it's no wonder why they're calling him the blue chip. I think Austin Theory has been incredibly promising going back to Evolve. He's just got it put together beyond his years. I mean, you can tell, like, when somebody like AJ Styles gets in there with him, AJ's got to be loving the way that Austin gives and receives in the ring, and just like he's always in the right position. He understands not just psychology, but also the physical psychology of a wrestling match. I mean, it's things that can easily go unnoticed. I think he's really a savant at this stuff. Again, at just such a young age. So I'm totally fine with when it comes to people like him and Rhea Ripley taking it slow to build them up. But with the Vince thing, you know, last time I was on, I was just giving it the pass of like, well, it's the Vince rub, so that's important. I don't care if Vince is coming off the way he's coming off. It's still the Vince rub. It still signals to you that it's important, whether or not it ends up the way the Chosen One thing ended up or not. You know, right now it seems like they've got him on a John Cena-like trajectory, or that is the idea. But what I am... it's still difficult to figure out exactly what the McMahon character is trying to accomplish here. So I'm waiting for the next step in the story, the next step in their relationship. Like, what is the next level of significance? Vince didn't get him a prime spot in the Rumble. Vince didn't, you know, Theory still had to earn his way into the Elimination Chamber. And I know a lot of what Vince has been doing is the tough love thing. So thereby if he got Theory a spot in the Rumble, maybe it would have been spot number one. But we still even aren't getting that much of the story. So I am waiting for whatever the next step is going to be, so we can sink our teeth in a little bit more there.
And then afterwards, Kevin Owens says, "I'm beloved in Texas. You can't leave me off the WrestleMania card," you know, Sonya, it's like, you might not even be on WrestleMania, much less headlining, because you're not going to be in the chamber. So the Owens character, kind of, again, broadly, your thoughts on the Owens character, the dynamic with Seth, how you think they want us to feel about him? Do you think the direction has been consistent and leading somewhere? And is him talking about how beloved he is in Texas and having the stunner as a move he just won with, are we reading into it too much to think there might be at least an angle with Stone Cold Steve Austin in Texas when Owens is boasting in an over-the-top way how much he's loved in Texas? Or is that just connecting dots that it's a stretch to connect?
No, it's not a stretch at all. I don't think he's ever won with that move before. It's always been a near fall, unless there's something I've missed. And now that his storyline has become, you might not be on the WrestleMania card at all, and he's like, please, 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 I've got to be on the WrestleMania card, he now becomes a prime person to not have a match, but go out there and start complaining and cut a promo, and then the glass breaks. I think it writes itself at this point. So it does seem like that's probably what we're headed toward in Dallas, Texas. The Owens character, I mean, again, just like every single thing that they give to Alexa, she excels at. Everything they give to Owens, he excels at so well. And just like the little things, I think, are some of the most enjoyable. Like tonight when Rollins went in, was kind of like trying to smack him, like, you know, come on, man, get up, we're in a tag match. And Owens, just the camera catches him going like, he hit me with an RKO, what do you want me to do? Why are you hitting me? And little stuff like that is just so funny. And he'll have little barbs here and there about the rhythms and tropes of WWE production that more savvy viewers pick up on and like him as a result. But yeah, you ask about consistency, and I I think the only answer is just that it's been extremely inconsistent, both the Rollins and the and, you know, I feel like I picked up the pieces of what they were doing with the brief Reigns feud for the Rumble. But both Rollins and the KO character have just been so inconsistent to the point where it's almost a conundrum of, like, how do you guys want us to feel about this?
Yeah.
And I, you know, like so many other people, I've just gotten to the point where I'm so tired of the, you know, are they heel or are they face conversation? Because it seems like every single week we're having, you know, for years now, we've been having that about somebody, not because it's not an important conversation and that clear-cut heels and faces are an effective way to present a wrestling show, but just because we have it every week and it's not changing, it's just like, I don't know what else to say about it. But like I've said about Lashley before, there are multiple Raw post shows where I've come on and gone like, okay, Lashley's officially face now, it happened. And you know, no, it had not. But tonight I was thinking, okay, finally, this is Owens turning face, right? And I hadn't quite formulated the whole the Steve Austin thing. That came later when he was talking to Sonya Deville, and she said you might not have a spot on the Mania card. But I was like, I mean, he's going over Austin Theory. It was a hard fought match. He's cheering with the crowd and feeding off the crowd. He's going against Rollins, who is openly lying to him and being conniving and sneaky, like sneaking around backstage like a cartoon character and slipping in and off camera and everything. And then at the end of the night, he's aligned with Rollins again, and they close the show, the two of them celebrating, or whatever it was that they were doing. And I'm just like, well, now we're back where we began, and I don't know how you guys want me to feel about this. So, yes, very, very inconsistent, I believe, to the detriment of Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
And Seth Rollins.
Sometimes I think, do I need to pay closer attention, rewatch segments, read a bunch of opinions, and really, like, because sometimes that's what I do with, you know, movie viewing, or if I'm watching, you know, The Wire or something, I'm like, okay, I want to go read about this episode and just make sense of it a little bit more, or see what other people have said. And then I realized, no, this is Vince McMahon, and it's just, you know, so often and lately the shades of gray and the what seem like breadcrumbs to clues just get disregarded. And I mean, imagine, you know, you're talking about KO and Seth. Just think about the Sonya Deville, Adam Pearce storyline and their dynamic, and how many times it's like, ooh, they're going somewhere, and then it just never gets followed up on. Like, oh, there's tension, or there's something going on here. And so much is just done with Vince McMahon either not remembering what he did or not caring what he did, because this week he's got a different thought and it's not a priority. And so in a way, you just sort of have to have sort of a cat's memory. You know, you kind of know how you feel about the WWE universe, but you don't dwell too much on you can't dwell on what happened 2 weeks ago too much, because it can drive you a little nuts, because there isn't going to be a big connection there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. My final thing is just Doudrop. I have become optimistic. She is going to become a centerpiece, relied upon, top tier featured talent. Her mic work, even in just the soundbite, which so often can sound so trite and, you know, Saturday Night's Main Event scripted sounding, going back all the way to, you know, Vince McMahon on NBC back in the mid-80s, where it's just, my God, this is so scripted compared to the syndicated shows where wrestlers are winging it still. And I thought she's produced compelling content in tonight's soundbite, especially relative to others in that spot. And then in the ring, she's good. I feel like they're kind of protecting her, or it's sort of like with Kevin Patrick, you just sort of read the tea leaves that they're kind of high on her in a way that maybe they didn't expect they would be or didn't plan to be, and they're rewarding her. So am I being too optimistic? Are you picking up on that? What do you think of her so far?
Well, I've, you know, like so many other people, I've liked her since the Mae Young Classic. And actually, I say that like so many other people, I learned of her after many other people who I hear of having been fans of her. But she was definitely one of my favorites in that first tournament in 2017. So I've continued to enjoy her, and the presentation of late has maybe been a bit confounding, but it does seem, and part of me is like, oh, I don't like saying it because of the body type, but just looking at how they have positioned her, it does seem like what they've done is put her in the Nia Jax role, And tonight they even had her, and I agree with what you said about the inset promo, but they had her focus on the word splatter. And that is a word that toward the end of her run, they had Nia Jax using. And it seems like somebody backstage just likes that word and wants a large woman splattering people by landing on them and doing splashes and leg drops and you know, oh, Nia Jax got let go before we could get that word out there as many times as satisfies us. So let's give it to Doudrop now. So yeah, I mean, for the time that she was there, Nia Jax was prominent. So yeah, I don't think you're seeing anything that's not there.
All right, Tom, anything you want to add that we haven't covered yet?
Did you know that Hamlet was the most film-adapted Shakespeare play?
No, I didn't. It felt like it was between that and Romeo and Juliet. I didn't think Chet Gable was way off, because he's the one who had, with great confidence, right? It was Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, and of course, yeah. Otis just focused on the first syllable, Ham.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I feel like I should have known Hamlet, because, I mean, come on, and I looked it up and over 50 versions have been made, but my guess was going to be Macbeth, just because I am obsessed with that play. I'm actually sitting in front of a copy of it from 1915, the Arden Shakespeare collection, an old schoolhouse edition, but I had to look it up, because I was almost certain that Hamlet went way back, and I'm only going into this as in a self-serving way, because I think it's interesting and we're at the end of the podcast now. But I knew that there was an early version of Hamlet, but it was not the earliest Shakespeare adaptation. The earliest version of Hamlet is from 1900. So it's I didn't look up this much. It's probably only a minute long, because that's how long film reels were. But they might have done multiple reels and done like maybe a 12-minute collection, because that did happen. But 1899 was the earliest Shakespeare adaptation. It was an adaptation of King John. I have actually seen it previously, and it's pretty much just like a dude in a king outfit sitting there for a minute. It's very dull. But if that intrigues anybody, it interests me. So I figured I'd put that out there, because that all ran through my mind when they were deliberating that question.
Fun. Anything else, Tom?
Anything actually about the show?
Oh, no, that was about that. I like that. That's a tangential sidebar, but it's attached.
Yes, and how bold of them to say Macbeth in what is technically a stage production. I was having a conversation about the play, since there's a new adaptation of it out on Apple TV Plus right now. I was talking with somebody about it the other day, and they have a background in theater, and they refused to say the name. They just kept on saying the Scottish play the whole time. But I think, as I'm scrolling to see if I had anything else, I'll just mention that I thought it was funny that I guess this really is my last thing. On Ms. TV, Rey Mysterio, because it happened to his son, Rey Mysterio was so upset about something that Miz did, which was right out of the Eddie Guerrero playbook, and the two of them were buddies.
Oh.
And I thought, okay, well, maybe they just didn't want to invoke the Eddie thing. And then they did that. And
yes,
I'm like,
I'm
this just...
that up.
Yeah, I just felt like, I don't know, they're trying to tell a story here. And again, like I said, hopefully they end up adding some more juice to it, because it feels like they want more longevity out of this feud. It feels like this is probably, if for no other reason than they didn't have anything else to do with either guy, it feels like this is probably the Mania feud for these talents. It is kind of like, I don't know if Ray actually would have been upset with that, but, you know, it happened to his boy, so.
I'm glad you brought it up. I would have felt bad if we didn't, because, yeah, Corey Graves was right, and you don't want your heel commentator who rationalizes all kinds of heinous acts by heels otherwise to just be right. You know, there's no law against tripping and falling. And, I mean, of course, yes, it was done nefariously. But, you know, if you're a babyface and they give you that storyline, you're like, can we please have something more substantial for me to complain about? Because this falls in the category of just whining and complaining, because Dominic couldn't keep his eye on the match. It's one thing for a heel to get distracted because they're heels and they're undisciplined and you don't want to admire them. But Dominic, yes, your dad got kicked out of ringside. There's someone in the ring who wants to punch you in the head. Maybe focus on that. I had the same reaction to Dominic's actions there as I do when somebody's complaining to the referee on defense in the NBA and the other team is running down 5-on-4 and scoring. It's like lobbing a referee when you don't get a foul called against your defender doesn't work. The ref never blows his whistle and goes, good argument, let me revise my call. But the other team goes down and scores on you. It's undisciplined. It makes me not want to cheer for that home team when they do it. This is mostly Carl Anthony Towns I'm talking about, but others too, over the years and currently. Stop doing that. Just play basketball. And you're not going to get every call. And that's how I feel about and I love my Timberwolves right now, by the way, but nevertheless. Ray and Dominic did not come across looking good here. And Miz just came across as clever. I did not like the closing line. I didn't like, you look more like Eddie's kid. You're so tall. And it's like, well, Eddie wasn't that tall. But first, why even go there? The skit didn't need it. And it has a history that just kind of brings you down and makes you go, that's right, WWE has used really bad judgment in the past. So I just didn't like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one thing that I had noted down to ask a live correspondent if we had received one. What was the actual reaction to that segment? Because, anybody in any crowd is going to enjoy getting to see Rey Mysterio in person. But it just a segment of him sitting there and complaining at The Miz with just little brief sentences here and there between The Miz carrying the whole bit. It definitely didn't work for me, definitely didn't get me on Ray's side.
All right, very good. We will wrap up there. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to our callers, our emailers. I'll be by Wednesday night with Bruce Hazelwood, and we'll be analyzing AEW Dynamite. And Tom, how do you feel about the term Forbidden Door?
Wow, interesting that you ask. It drives me insane. And I know the current question about or the current issue with it is that whatever Tony has announced is somebody who's not actually coming from or I understand anyway that that this is an abuse of that term. Yeah. But I think it's just my bias against that company that that when I hear that term being used for like, oh, WWE might open the forbidden door for the Royal Rumble, I'm like, can we not? That's his thing. This isn't a general term now. But, I don't know. That I think that's just my bias. If it's a term that's taken off, then fine. But personally, drives me a bit nuts.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the term. I choose not to get worked up about it. But it feels – I'm just not a fan of, like, clubhousey stuff. Like, everything just feels kind of clubhouse. And this just feels like it's just, it's like, This Is Awesome Chance and Fight Forever, the stuff that Todd Martin talks about. Just like, this
absolutely.
It's in that category for me. It's like, mm-hmm. It's just too cute and overdone and it feels, So, I know, 60% of the listeners are like, we're never listen to anything you say again. I love the Forbidden Door, but there's a chance Tony's sick of it now too, but he just feels like it's a ratings thing and people know the term and they hashtag it, so I got to go with it. But I'm ready to retire it. I honestly wasn't a big fan from the beginning, but I became less so week by week by week. So we'll see. I can't wait for Shane McMahon to debut and cut the promo to end all promos on Wednesday.
Oh, God.
Although, and then there's, the headline story based on a Reddit thread that it's going to be Triple H. It's like, I talked to someone in WWE about that today, and they're just like, highly unlikely, which means it's going to be more fun when it happens because everyone will be shocked.
Dear Lord.
Or it's Wyndham Rotunda showing up or...
See, not that I have a guess, but I think that's the one that would probably be at the top of my list.
Yeah. I mean, it does make the most sense. I mean, Anyway, we've gone long enough. We'll save that for another podcast.
I can hear you biting your tongue. I can hear you biting.
Yeah, I could
no spoilers, right?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Check out PWT Talks NXT. There is a link, there should be, every week in the NXT TV reports at pwtorch.com. That will take you right to the show, the live stream of the show. What time are you guys usually starting the live show now after NXT ends? How many minutes after?
We've we've been better about getting started within 10 to 15 minutes of the show ending. I know for a while there was a gap, but we've been much better about getting it started closer to when the overrun ends.
You know who's going to be all there tomorrow?
Well, it's been a crapshoot lately. I've been calling it the most cursed podcast on the Daily Cast lineup because every week, I mean, it's legit stuff that keeps coming up, and it always has to happen on Tuesday night. But as of right now, it's supposed to be the main three. Doc Bruce has been joining us regularly lately as well, but myself, Nate, and Kelly, or I should say. Kelly, Nate, and me.
There you go. Yes. Good. I'll edit that. Clean it up for you, Tom.
Oh, thank you very much.
The misuse of the word myself, is right there with Forbidden Door, but what are we going to do?
Okay.
But you're self-aware and you're in the same boat and you self-corrected. So full point, extra credit.
Excellent.
You drew attention to it in a good way. Very good. So yeah, join them tomorrow. Then the show can be downloaded, on Wednesday. We're going to try to get it out to VIP members sooner than it goes up on the free feed as a gesture of thanks to those who support us on the VIP side of things. Cool. So search PW Torch on your podcast app to get the PW Torch Daily Cast, which shows dedicated to NXT, AEW, Ring of Honor, and more. And our new 30 years ago flashback show, looking at the Pressing Torch newsletter back issues from, your show goes back to another era. Our newest Daily Cast goes back to, we're now in, they're looking at February of 1992 and what I was writing about wrestling back then. So check that show out also on the lineup. Okay, that'll do it. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.